In 1896, the respected astronomer and millionaire Percival Lowell pondered on the realities of Mars. Asking himself if physical forces alone were at work there, or if evolution had created something more complex. A decade later, after the dedication of his time, his expertise, and his immense fortune, this man of science found himself with the following chilling and world-altering conclusion. That Mars is inhabited by beings of some sort or other, we may consider as certain. Welcome to this series of the podcast, in which we will be listening to stories and interviews with experts about other worlds. In this first episode, we investigate humanity's obsessive relationship with Mars and subsequently the idea of the Martian. In episode 2, I speak with an astrobiologist and author on the series of contradictions that we have on the topic of life elsewhere. Life on Earth is somehow special, yet there is an abundance of Earth-like planets within our universe. Life is fragile, yet life always finds a way. In this conversation, we discuss what is significant in astrobiology and what that means for the future. Lastly, on episode 3, I speak with a SETI and Unistellar planetary scientist. We talk about how we find these other worlds, how truly abundant they really are, and some of the philosophical and moral significance of this pursuit. If you enjoyed what you listened to, or have any feedback, or just want to say hello, please help out by visiting The Blunt Report on social media, giving a rating, or even telling a friend about what you listened to. The podcast is available on all platforms, including video podcasts on YouTube, or can simply be found at thebluntreport.com. Mars tugs at the human imagination like no other planet. With a force mightier than gravity, it attracts the eye to the shimmering red presence in the clear night sky. John Noble Wilford, Mars Beckons. Humanity's relationship with Mars stems back a long, long time, and for one reason or another, we seem to have a spiritual and mythical fascination with this planet, bordering on obsession more so than the other planets. Venus, our neighbor on the opposite side and the brightest object in the night sky other than the moon, was once believed to be two separate stars, and observations were generally less thorough and generally less apparent throughout history. The Egyptians, for example, had identified Mars's strange retrograde motion by 2000 years BCE, and Mars features in the tombs of some of the greatest pharaohs and was important enough to be included in the oldest known star map, known as Senenmut. The records of the Babylonians and in the East with various dynasties of China also detailed the patterns of the red planet. Later, Mars took on a more powerful stance. The Mesopotamians knew the planet as their fiery lion-like god of destruction Nergal, the guardian of the underworld. The Greeks associated the planet with Ares, the god of war, and had a tricky relationship with him, a relationship of painful necessity, but of contempt and even revulsion. Ares represented the ugly and untamed side of war, things like violence and bloodlust, while Ares himself was, as quoted in the book Greek Religion, overwhelming, insatiable in battle, destructive and manslaughtering. The Iliad regarded Ares as the most hateful god of Zeus, and his children were Phobos and Deimos, or, as we know them, fear and terror. Finally, the Romans morphed the Greek god Ares and gave us the name we know today, Mars. Mars was still considered to be the god of war by the Romans, yet more virtuous, more trustworthy, and more level-headed than the bloodthirsty Ares. Mars was second only to Jupiter in the Roman pantheon and was thought to be the father of Romulus and Remus, the mythical founders of Rome, yet again changing our relationship with the planet. On a more scientific basis, our relationship with Mars has arguably been even more peculiar. Our story begins more or less with the eclectic Danish astronomer Tycho Brahe, who, to say the least, was not your typical scientist. Famously, he wore a fake brass nose that he had to meticulously glue on with paste, as he lost his real nose in a sword fight with a colleague over who was the better mathematician. Also, one of his greatest friends was a man with dwarfism named Yeppe, who Brahe believed to be psychic. And last but certainly not least, Brahe kept a fully grown elk as a pet that sadly passed away after drinking too much beer and falling down the stairs. Yet, regardless of Brahe's personal life, he was an extremely meticulous astronomical observer, attaining some of the most accurate results of the era. And although he didn't specifically make any conclusions on Mars itself, fortunately for us, he took on a young assistant by the name of Johannes Kepler. During Brahe's lifetime, Kepler wasn't able to see the full extent of the significance of the Mars data that Brahe had collected, as Brahe guarded his results extremely jealously. But after his death, this precise data fell into the hands of Kepler, who used the orbital observations of Mars to conclude one of the most significant discoveries in astronomy: that orbits are not circular, like Copernicus had once thought, but in fact elliptical, thus creating the laws for planetary motion that are still used today. It was in more modern times that us Earthlings began fervently pondering the possibility of a Martian civilization, culminating in Mars Fever, War of the Worlds, decades of targeted research, and leading the great speaker Carl Sagan to say that Mars has become a kind of mythic arena onto which we have projected our earthly hopes and fears. The idea of a Martian race actually came after some solid scientific work and evidence. For example, it was known that the rotation period, and so the length of a day on Mars, was almost the same as Earth's. It was known that Mars has an axial tilt almost the same as Earth's, resulting in seasons and yearly fluctuations of temperature just like ours. And not only that, a large number of dark spots on Mars' surface were taken to be oceans, giving yet more credence to the idea that Mars might be inhabited. This idea of habitability, however, finally reached its crescendo in 1877, during a time known as Mars Opposition, in which Mars and Earth are at their closest point. The Italian astronomer Giovanni Schiaparelli took some observations. Looking at the red planet through his telescope, he saw a number of dark, geometric, streaking lines traversing the Martian surface. He called the structures, in Italian, canale, meaning canal, channel, duct, or gully. To the rest of the world, though, and specifically the English-speaking world, this nuance of meaning canale was entirely lost. Schiaparelli's conclusion was clear to them. He had found Martian canals. The speed at which this mainly erroneous observation spread through the world of astronomy was quite breathtaking. American astronomer Charles Young considered the presence of these canals to be wholly confirmed only a few years later. Irish astronomer Charles Burton created some of the earliest sketches and maps of these canals, and in 1892, W.H. Pickering found black spots from an observatory in Peru thought to be seas at the starting point of each canal. Yet, more than anyone else, it was the character at the beginning of our story that popularized the belief of intelligent Martian life forms. Astronomer Percival Lowell. It's important to note that Lowell did have a considerable impact on astronomy. He identified the minor planet 793 Arizona, he won a prestigious science award, he put a lot of work into understanding where to best build observatories to enhance clarity, and perhaps most significantly, he began the effort that led to the discovery of Pluto. Yet, regardless of these achievements, Lowell is certainly known as the person who did more than any other to support the idea that Mars contained intelligent beings, and specifically, that Schiaparelli's canals on Mars were feats of engineering. Lowell dedicated the good part of 15 years, as well as his fortune, in studying these mysterious canals. He theorized that these canals were immense irrigation systems that stemmed up to the growing and receding seasonal polar ice caps being used to breathe life into an otherwise arid and dying planet. Lowell published three works on this phenomenon, entitled Mars, Mars and Its Canals, and Mars as the Abode of Life. Through this research, he took the canals as absolute proof of the existence of Martians, having almost an admiration for them. Once he said that a mind of no mean order would seem to have presided over the system we see, a mind certainly of considerably more comprehensiveness than which presides over the various departments of our own public works. The reality, though, was less cosmic and more earthbound. Observations by others did not find any canals, found canals in different places, or found that canals had moved entirely. Dark spots or other features thought to be bodies of water often changed coloration, changed shape, or even had an indefinite outline. Lowell's life work, this immense system of irrigation, painfully was nothing more than an error of the primitive instruments of the era. Astronomy at this time was no mean feat. Lenses within telescopes were not at all advanced, ideal locations for observing were not necessarily established, and astronomers had to stare for hours with no photography through an eyepiece, waiting for periods of still air in which they could catch the briefest of glimpses of whatever astronomical body that they were studying. At this juncture, it's easy to dismiss Lowell. However, to truly understand why this happened, we must take a look back at the environment in which he lived. As previously discussed, the instruments used were not up to the task of distinguishing such subtleties. Not only that, although it might seem strange to us today, in the past, the question of life elsewhere was less of an if, but more of a what. Extraterrestrial life was not considered particularly remarkable. Not only that, he was certainly not alone in this affinity for Mars or life elsewhere. As an example, the famous mind of Nikola Tesla believed he had received radio transmissions from Mars, with the great physicist Lord Kelvin wholeheartedly agreeing with him. While Winston Churchill himself wrote an 11-page essay on the universe and his belief in life elsewhere. Add to the mix stories like War of the Worlds and the discoveries of the past habitability of Mars, it is understandable why humans were easily gripped by this so-called Mars fever. Ultimately, though, NASA's Viking missions in the 70s once and for all ended any speculation about these Martian canals. And what's interesting to me is that although Lowell was entirely wrong about the presence of these vast aqueducts on Mars, he certainly was correct about how Earth-like and habitable with the presence of flowing liquid water, Mars was not too long ago at all. Modern science is showing more and more that it is truly our galactic sibling. And as a way to wrap up this episode and as an ode to Lowell, we will combine some new science with some of the old. As it stands, SETI, the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, estimates that there could be 300 million habitable Earth-like planets in our galaxy alone. As we reflect on this mind-boggling number now, Percival Lowell once looked up at the night sky and thought about something similar, quoting that, "When we think that each of these stars is probably the center of a solar system grander than our own, we cannot seriously take ourselves to be the only minds in it all." If you enjoyed what you listened to or have any feedback or just want to say hello, please help out by visiting the Blunt Report on social media, giving a rating, or even telling a friend about what you listened to. The podcast is available on all platforms, including video podcasts on YouTube, or can simply be found at thebluntreport.com.